15th century English poetry. Introduction. The 15th century was a period of singular barrenness and regard literary production, particularly poetry. No poet of the century come anywhere near Chaucer, who dominated the previous century like a colossus. We have in 15th century a number of sons of Geoffrey, or what we call the Chaucerians, who professedly imitated the great master. Imitation in its broader implication is not a bad nor despicable activity. But we find that the Chaucerian of the 15th century limited Chaucer to slavishly and mechanically so that their imitation could capture only trapping and not the vigorous body or the subtle soul of Chaucer's poetry. Moreover, very few of the Chaucerian thought of imitating the best work of Chaucer, namely the Tercentenary Tales. They restricted their attention to his allegorical and dream poetry, which is far below his best. As regards drama and prose of age was not so unproductive, however. Sir Thomas Malory and Caxton in particular contributed not merely to the development and the fixation of English prose. A sense of style also came in. Caxton is an important figure in the history of English literature, as it was he who initiated the art of printing in England. In his preface to the publication, he wrote a refreshing, natural and professional style, which has earned from him a secure place in the history of English prose. The introduction of the art of printing in England made books available at cheap prices, and commonalty literacy who increased considerably and literature. Hitherto, a privileged pursuit of a elite become more popular in the true sense of the word. Let us discuss the salient feature of trend of their poetry of the 15th century. Allegorical and dream poetry. As we have mentioned above, most of the imitator of Chaucer set their sight on imitating his minor work and not at the Naples ultra of his poetic art, namely the Tercentenary Tales, the work of Chaucer which most readily came in for imitation were the following three: The Parliament of Fowls, The Book of the Duchess, and The House of Fame. All these works are but mediocre in quality and were written by the Chaucer, obviously in imitation of the well-known tradition of dream and allegory of so popular with the medieval English poet. None of them displayed any direct first-hand contact with life or reality as the Tercentenary Tales so abundantly and so superbly does. The work of Chaucer imitator is naturally enough remote from reality. The selection of Tercentenary Tales and the fresh wood and pastures new opened up by Chaucer seems to have held no attraction for the Chaucerian, for the most part entrenched in the medieval tradition. They failed to capture the real life freshness and Chaucer's poetry. The poet usually found himself dreaming the taken to a garden and there involved in some stock incident in which figured such stock characters as a goddess of love and various virtues and vices in personified forms. William Dunbar's The Golden Church, the Lygette's Temple of Glass for the poem of this kind. In the former, of the poet falls asleep on a May morning in a garden and dreams of a ship full of 100 allegorical ladies of King Cupid court. Regent with his golden tresses, S-H-I-E-L-D, shield in bracket, tries unsuccessfully to protect the poet from the arrows of love. Stephen Hughes, in his example of virtues, related the story of a youth who, led by reason, succeeds finally in marrying purity, the daughter of the king of love, his pastime of pleasure, and the amber and the thistle and the rose provide. Some more example of the allegorical dream poetry. Some of these poems might have provided Spenser with some germinal hints. It was only Huckles, perhaps, who to some extent continued the tradition of English city life, as it was sketched in Sainsbury Tales. His picture of London in La Mala Regle is not uninteresting. La Mala Regle is French. L-A-M-A-L-E-R-E-G-L-E. The next topic, satire and didactism. 15th century poets followed Langland and Moral Jover too in their practice of satire and didacticism. Chaucer had nothing of the reformer of the preacher in him. And his forte was not satire, but naughty irony. But Langland and Pierce and Plowman and Jover in all his major work aimed a different effect. Their lead is more particularly accepted by the John Skelton, the reused satirist of the 15th century. He hits very crudely indeed, though he hits very hard. He is well known for his satires on the clergy, but is best known for the boldness with which he attacks the all-powerful Wolsey, W-O-L-S-E-Y. William Dunbar continued the satiric tradition in a major part of his poetic output. His satire is generally of the nature of jovial invective, but sometimes takes up a color of rebellion grotesque, as for instance in his dance of a seven deadly sins, the Eclogues. 15th century is known for the appearance of the Virgilian Eclogue, E-C-L-O-G-U-E, as a new genre of English literature. An Eclogue is generally a short poem, especially a pastoral dialogue, in bracket, generally between shepherds and shepherdesses, written in the manner of Virgil and Theocritus. The man who introduced the Eclogue in England was Alexander Berkeley, the translator of the famous work of German poet Sebastian Brandt, entitled By the Ship of the Fool. His Eclogue were mainly modeled upon those the Italian poet Mantuanus, and have elements the satire which we find absent from those of Virgil. Berkeley of Fort, in his mastery of detail and his very effective handling of the dialogue between his shepherd. Further, his work contain plentiful reference to current English affair. The ballads. The ballad is another gift of the 15th century to English literature. Ballads constitute a considerable part of English folk literature. They are transmitted orally from one generation to the next. Most of the ballads in English remain anonymous, and according to the older critical opinion, as represented by F.V. Jemmer, G-U-M-M-E-R-E, in The Beginnings of Poetry, 1901, they had a communal origin, that is, they were authored not by individual but by the community as a whole. Modern critical opinion, however, is inclined against the communal theory of origin of the ballads. The ballad originally existed as some song accompanying a folk dance, but later it came to signify a short narrative poem told impersonally with some dramatic interest in more or less a traditional metrical form. Most commonly, the stanza employed with it consists of four lines, the second and the fourth rhyming together. The first and the third lines contain four stresses and the other two, three each. See, for instance, the opening verse of Sir Patrick Spence. The king sits in dumfringling tune, drinking the blue red wine. O war, will I get a guard sailor to sail this ship of mine? The theme of the most of the ballads are love, domestic tragedy, war, history,